Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. Later on, if the best-selling Bratz dolls could speak, they would surely sing the blues for the workers who produce them. But first, down to New Orleans to catch up with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund. And we do have Curtis Muhammad with us. I continue to be incensed at the relative lack of response collectively in this country of progressive forces to the ongoing siege of New Orleans. For example, a major fierce battle is unfolding around the future of the public housing projects. HUD had announced that they were going to be destroyed. The last time we spoke to you, you were planning to get arrested, retaking some of the public housing projects back. So where are we with the issue of the housing?
Let me go into that. Our group is called the People's Organizing Committee at this point. This is a collective of organizers that work for the people under both the survival councils and the residents of public housing. And what they have decided to do is go home, and we have been helping them to go home. Now, on Martin Luther King's birthday, we are inviting people down to support folk on this right. We believe that's a right. We believe throughout history, when a storm would come to New Orleans, we would leave until the storm cleared, and we'd come back and go home and go to work. In this case, a decision was made, first of all, to kill the poor black folks. And then when they didn't kill them, they said they can't come home. So there are no houses being built nowhere in New Orleans for poor black folks. Instead of bringing poor people home, they have decided, the federal government, HUD, has decided to tear down about two-thirds of all public housing in New Orleans. And we should mention, this is public housing that was not on the chopping block before the hurricane. The hurricane has provided them a way to do what they call ethnic cleansing, I think is the international term for this, of getting rid of their poor black folks. And somehow we watched it with the helicopters in the days after the Katrina, picking up people and leaving other people. We saw some people standing on roofs, waving flags and trying to get picked up, and the helicopter flying over them and picking up others. We saw buses and trucks moving some people out of the city, but leaving others. And it was very unclear, I think, to most of us who was being left and who was being taken. What it boils down to, the poor black community was left in this city waiting for the waters to drown them. 6,000 or so of them did die. And they finally, after much pressure from the country, moved the people out, flung them into 47 states, including Hawaii, including Puerto Rico, including Alaska. And now they're not making any preparations for those people to come back to the city.
Curtis, yes, let me ask you. HUD, of course, will say that, look, the housing was a powder keg. It was dangerous. It was a moldy. The floodwaters rose, and they've got to take it down. And this is as though there was some sort of melancholy or sentimentality about the existing public housing. This isn't about people living. So if you look at the recent New York Times article, for example, they make it seem quite peculiar that people are standing up there and saying, we want to maintain this public housing, and we're talking about tens of thousands of people. It shouldn't be torn down. Well, what should we know about the reality of why that housing must stay?
You should come and look at this housing. You're looking at very well-built brick structures in many, many cases. In one case, we're looking at a housing project that's behind the best levee in this city, and that's the levee that protects downtown and the French Quarter. Well, one of the projects sits behind that same levee, about 10 blocks away from the levee. And that housing system is perfect. And they have boarded, they have closed it down with iron gates and iron windows, steel reinforced. And they have made it illegal for the people to come back home in that sector of the city. And that is one of the projects on the chopping block. We have gone in because it's our town. We think the government is being illegal. We think the citizens who want to bring people home are the legal ones. And we really should enforce that right. So we've been in there and we've looked. Water lines didn't make it to the first floor of the houses. The houses are in perfect condition. There's no damage. And yet they would not let people move back in those houses. And instead, those houses have been scheduled for the chopping block. I don't think we're dealing with technical engineering problems here. We're dealing with a political hatred of poor black folks where they no longer have use for them because they've found a cheaper slave to do the work, the new slave called the immigrant. Whether that immigrant is legal or illegal, that immigrant now is the new slave, and they no longer need the old one.
Well, Curtis, as I said last time I spoke to you, you were in the process of about to be arrested, literally re-seizing in Tremaine, etc., some of the public housing. What has happened with that? And similarly, you were also looking to take back or to take and use those many unused trailers. Thousands, I understand, that were there that were unused.
Well, I've been to jail once for trying to provide these trailers and housing for people, and about 8 or 9 other people have gone to jail for the same thing. We haven't had court on it yet because I know they're going to have trouble with this in the court system, because the court system gives people due process before you can throw them out of their houses, and they haven't been given due process. These people hold leases to their houses, they hold deeds to their land, and the FEMA trailers have been, they've been told that they belong to the people. Now, right after we got arrested, they advertised that FEMA trailers were available for nonprofit organizations to pick them up for the poor. Since then, we have investigated it to try to get trailers under that particular ruling, and it cost $16,000 per trailer to move them for a 501c3 nonprofit organization to pick up a trailer on behalf of poor people. So there is no process still in place to get trailers for the poor. We can't find poor people who are getting money and getting trailer and getting assistance to come home. It's not a plan on anybody's book to get poor people back home. They talk it, but nobody's on this ground making that happen but a small few of us who are working with these people. But the people are coming home.
And the new Democrats, have they made a difference? I mean, even Ron Dellums, as he really advocated for the people of African ancestry of New Orleans?
Well, we got a problem in this country. We have a problem of setting up godfathers for the poor. None of us have never believed the poor have the genius to do for themselves. So we don't have a mechanism for placing resources and power and responsibility in the hands of the poor. We always look for a godfather, a church, a university, 501c3 organization or somebody to speak for and to make decisions for the poor. So as a result, millions and sometimes billions of dollars are being flowing into New Orleans supposedly to help the poor. It never makes it there because there's been such a divide between the haves and the have-nots. And so there is no mechanism in place to turn resources over to the poor community. But the very truth is, any good, intelligent person can look at the development in New Orleans. They can look and see every hotel has been renovated and is in full swing. Every downtown business, restaurant, movie theater has been put back on the market. Every section of the rich community is flourishing, even down to the plants and the grass. You would think if you didn't go in the poor community of New Orleans, you would say New Orleans is back. The great Superdome is better than it ever was where the people were suffering. The convention center is better than it ever was. All of the oil rigs that was torn down in the Gulf Coast from the stuff, they have been fixed and they're in full swing. So where did the money go? We don't know. It didn't go to the poor. Huh? So where is it?
Well, Curtis, what do those of us who should be involved do from here? How do we get in touch with PAC and continue the struggle?
Well, first of all, we got to stop being so nice and sweet. This is the sweetest period we have been in history. When that kid got killed out there, got beat up out there, and I forgot his name, and said, can't we all get along? Somebody remember his
Rodney
name.
Rodney King.
When he got, the city burned. When Martin was killed, the city burned. When people couldn't vote and we went to Atlantic City and they threw us out of Atlantic City, all the cities throughout the country burned. Today we are watching thousands of people lives being totally uprooted, children going to jail, move in 4,000 armed National Guardsmen to quote-unquote keep down the criminals. Damn, the army could rebuild the damn city, right? But instead, they send the army in to keep down crime. So somebody got to get mad. Somebody got to raise some damn hell. And we say, come on down here and raise some hell with us. Help these people get in their houses. If you're singing rap songs, come sing them down here at the front door of public housing with us. If you're a speaker, if you're some big shot, say you believe in helping African-American people, come down and help these poor people get in their houses. Knock a lock off this door. Be a citizen in charge of your poor. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can call us at 504-872-9591. Or you can look on our web page. All of our contact information is there, peoplesorganizing.org. Or you can just come to New Orleans and call us on the telephone. Again, 504-872-9591.
Curtis Muhammad, thank you for continuing the work that you've done for really decades now.
Send us some money, too.
And we'll tell people, send you some money, and we'll see you in New Orleans, brother.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you read my sign? My signs has helped me, please. Get me off this rooftop. Can somebody rescue me? Can you hear the people crying? Crying in despair. Each day we're losing hope. Does anybody care?
Then it hit me. Ain't nobody coming to get me. No one feels my pain. Once again, the color of my skin reminds me things ain't changed.
Now we're going to take a look at Passion for Fashion, Made in China, Sweated Labor, Dirty Little Secrets Behind the Flashy, Best-Selling Bratz Dolls, with Barbara Briggs of the National Labor Committee. The National Labor Committee, in collaboration with China Labor Watch, recently prepared a report on Bratz Dolls, the heavily made-up, diva-like, skimpily-clad, blinged-up dolls that now are all the rage. These dolls rank as the most sought-after toy, surpassing Barbie. But I keep wondering if Bratz Dolls, as I said, could speak. Would they sing the blues for those workers who make them? Barbara, would they start singing the blues?
I think so. There are 4,000 workers at the Huatai 4K factory in Guangdong province in China. And as you say, they're now making the top-selling fashion doll in America and also in England. They're expected to take in 40% of the toy market. These workers are in very tough straits. They're working 94 hours a week. They're working far surpassing Chinese labor law. It's forced overtime. They're not allowed to take breaks. They're producing these dolls for MGA Entertainment, which is in turn retailing them at retailers all over the country, Walmart, Toys R Us, and other toy stores. Besides the forced overtime, they're not paid properly. They're working themselves silly. The dormitories, they're living 10 workers to a dorm. The food is terrible that they're forced to eat, and they're not making enough. I mean, most of the time they work the overtime voluntarily because they absolutely need the money. They're making 50 cents an hour, about 17 cents for each of these dolls that they make, and the dolls retail for $16 and up.
So how much will the Bratz bring in sales?
About $3 billion.
And the markup price when the dolls enter the U.S. market?
The dolls come into the market. The full production cost, you know, labor, materials, profit to the factory, transportation to the U.S. is about $3 and something. They're being sold for $16. So it's essentially like a 445% markup to the U.S. So, you know, the money in the United States is, you know, is about $13.
Now, I wasn't kidding when I said scantily clad and kind of these diva-like looks. The black dolls are merely painted that color but have the same kind of features as the white dolls. They are extremely gaudy and, to my way, socially painfully popular. Really vulgar kind of blinged-up dolls that could work their way around some of the more seedy areas of 42nd Street and 8th Avenue. But they are popular. Now, I want to paint a real picture again of these dolls. Who is making them?
What are their lives like? 4,000 Chinese workers. They mostly come from families who live in the countryside, so they're traveling to Guangdong province because their families desperately need them to be working and sending income home. They're working 13.5 hour to 15.5 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's, by the way, against the law. They're supposed to have at least one day off a week. They're supposed to be working, they're a maximum of 36 hours of overtime a month, but they're working about 37 hours of overtime each week. So, again, it's against Chinese law. They're making 51.5 cents an hour, about $4.13 a day for the 8-hour shift, not counting overtime, or about $90 a month, $89.39 a month. That's below subsistence wage. So, you know, I mean, they're already in desperate shape. Not only that, but contrary to Chinese law, they're denied work injury and health insurance. They're also denied sick days. If you take a sick day, you lose 3 days' wages. If you make a mistake or damage a doll, you know, paint it wrong or something, you lose 5 hours' wages. So these workers are in desperate shape. If you fail to meet your production goal, which, by the way, goes up, you know, you start a new style and it's, you know, higher than you can possibly make it, and then after 20 days or so, when you're beginning to feel comfortable with it, they raise the production goal again, so you're always working frantically. If you can't make the production goal, you're working that overtime, you know, extra hours until you make your goal. Then you go home at typically between 9 and 11 o'clock at night, and you're living in a small, in a dormitory, in a small dorm room with 10 workers, you know, all living in bunk beds. And there's no shower in your dorm room. It's all, you know, very communal showers. So it's tough straits. But it gets worse than that. The factory now wants to take all of these workers, some of whom have worked up to 10 years, and they want to move them into status of temporary workers. So in January, the plan is to fire all these workers, 4,000 workers, fire them, keep them out for a month, and then bring them back on temporary contracts of between a month and 8 months maximum. They want to do this because the Chinese government in Guangdong has recently passed a law that workers who've worked for more than a year are supposed to get a benefit, a bonus of 1 month's pay each year. In other words, $90. Well, that's too much for MGA and Walmart and Toys R Us, and they don't want to do it. So they want to fire these 4,000 workers, keep them out for a month, and then bring them back on these temporary contracts where they would lose any legal standing, you know, not only that benefit, but any possibility of getting the other legal benefits that they're supposed to get, in other words, health insurance, retirement, work injury insurance. So these workers are actually so desperate that they're planning to strike in January, you know, making the most popular doll in America, making the stuff that, you know, unfortunately, all of our little girls want. So they're absolutely desperate and planning this desperate action in January and, quite honestly, need our help and need our awareness.
Barbara, you talked about laws in China. Certainly there have been serious problems in China in any production area, tremendous abuses, and there hasn't exactly been observance of labor laws. On the other hand, you have the markups in this country and a complete callous disregard for labor standards in general when it comes to bringing cheaper goods in, exploiting that reality, exploiting the workers abroad. So where does that culpability, where does that point of vulnerability lie even for the workers should they actually take action?
It's obvious that there's plenty of responsibility to go around. Obviously, the management is supposed to follow Chinese law. Obviously, the Chinese government should be enforcing compliance with the law. On the other hand, Walmart is getting these dolls, Toys R Us is getting these dolls, and the workers tell us another story. They say that Walmart, you know, because of pressure in the U.S., because you and I and thousands of people across the U.S. have expressed concern, Walmart has now been forced essentially to hire monitors who come to visit these factories. The workers tell this very interesting story. Walmart monitors come to the factory, they visit the factory, but before they come, they announce their visit, so the company management knows they're coming. They write up cheat sheets with questions and answers, questions that the workers might be asked. So before these gullible Walmart monitors come, everything's cleaned up, of course. The factory's in ship shape. Everything's gorgeous. The bathrooms are clean. Everything's lovely. And then the workers get handed out this sheet, which they're expected to memorize. And the questions and answers go like this. And I'm reading off the top of the sheet. Does management pay attention to problems that are raised? Answer, yes. For example, if it's too hot, the factory provides cold tea for the workers. How are the hours organized? I work 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. How many overtime hours do you work? In a busy season, I don't work more than 4 hours. That's the minimum, by the way, that they might work in the busy season. In the slow season, it is not more than 2 hours. If you are feeling really tired or sick, what do you do? Can you refuse to work overtime? Answer, you can ask for time off. You don't have to work overtime, and it goes on from there. In other words, these workers are given a piece of paper that they're told, you must memorize this, and if anybody asks you a question, you have to lie about it.
Now, I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to be cynical.
Oh, no, me,
but Walmart, naive, clearly. How could they not be complicit? How can they not understand that these are routinized, rehearsed, parroted questions and responses?
Gosh, I don't know. And, I mean, if little National Labor Committee and China Labor Watch, the communications revolution is amazing. I mean, we get this stuff. We get the original documents along with worker testimony with just some effort, but not extraordinarily, information is available. And quite honestly, for a company that's marking up to such an extraordinary level on a doll that's obviously so highly profitable, $3 billion, that's a lot of money. We think there's plenty of responsibility to go around, and the U.S. retailers that are so profiting off this product and the manufacturer, MGA, in addition to the Walmart and the Toys R Us, they have to take some responsibility as well, since they're the ones who are profiting so extraordinarily.
Responsibility. Let's go to
Walmart.
Yeah,
I just want to mention.
Please do.
And the workers are making about 1% of the retail price. I mean, if you calculate, there are 50 workers on a line. Their production goal, sort of on average, is 150 dolls per hour. The dolls are selling for about $16. So they're making about $49 and up worth of product. In the meantime, the workers are making 51 cents an hour. So if you divide that, if you do the math, they're making about 17 cents per doll. And each doll is about $16. So they're making 1% of the retail value of these dolls, while the gross majority of the income and the profit is landing in the United States with the U.S. companies.
Well, what do you do with the Walmart, which is now engaged in really production in the sense that things are deliberately and specifically produced for Walmart, and then they retail them? They are the largest employer in the world. So where does the discipline begin to start? Doesn't this actually go back to Walmart being the fulcrum? Yeah, you can put Toys R Us and so on in there, but certainly Walmart, because of its gigantic size.
I wouldn't take Toys R Us off the hook either. But, you know, honestly, the initiative, the tipping point starts right here, right now with listeners. It's that pressure and concern and communication from people who are concerned in the United States that has made a difference, beginning with the children who were producing Kathy Lee pants. Over the years, the fact that U.S. consumers have communicated with our companies and said, hey, we don't want our stuff made in sweatshops. We're going to stand in solidarity with them and expect our companies to assure that these workers, that their fundamental human rights and women's rights and workers' rights are respected, and that local law is respected as well as international labor standards. And these companies are not even respecting a shred of China's own national labor law, and that has to change.
Barbara, the National Labor Committee has been absolutely persistent, and I want to build in now that the National Labor Committee director, Charlie Kernaghan, was a recipient of the Cultural Freedom Award from the Lannan Foundation. Congratulations, long overdue. I hope that continues to help propel this very important organization forward. You mentioned that the workers may indeed go out on strike. Again, we're dealing with China, where workers have certainly not fared well in response to protestation of the conditions that they face. What do you think can be done to ease their road forward, and what might happen if indeed they take such an extraordinary stand?
They would be in physical danger. I mean, not only would they stand to lose the income, not only could they stand, you know, risk losing their jobs, not only would they be out on the streets, which is scary and miserable and causes workers to suffer no matter when it happens. But in China, they could also go to jail. There could be terrible consequences, and we have to do everything that we can to help them avert that by, again, communicating with Walmart, with Toys R Us, and with MGA Entertainment, and saying you have to assure that local labor law is respected, that these workers get that bonus that they're supposed to get, that they're not put on temporary contracts, that they remain permanent workers as they're supposed to, and also that local law be respected, that they should be getting the health insurance, the work injury insurance, and the retirement payments that they are supposed to be getting. We're asking people to communicate mm-hmm. with Walmart and Toys R Us and MGA.
And the message to them specifically is?
Make sure that the Huatai 4K factory is respecting Chinese law. Make sure that all human rights, workers' rights are respected, and specifically that these workers are kept on their permanent contracts and not put on their temporary contracts. The entire report is on our website, along with lots of photos of the factory and the dorms and the dolls, and along with the contact information, including an easy way to send an email letter to Walmart, Toys R Us, and MGA Entertainment. And we'd really encourage people to do it. It could help a lot at this point. We could help these workers avert this strike, which could be devastating for them.
Are you encouraged, given all the hard
Absolutely.
Work that you've put in, about the coming together of the consumer and the worker realm so that people really understand the necessity?
We think it's really, mm-hmm. really important. And can we give our URL?
I would insist that you do.
Great. Well, it's www.nlcnet.org. That's NLCNET, like National Labor Committee, net.org. Enough of us care so that the U.S. companies have had to listen. Few letters right now could help avert a lot of suffering and could make these young workers' lives much better.
Barbara Briggs, thank you so much for joining us.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And you can reach us at knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org.